This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
You're listening to Men Talk on Plains FM, your fortnightly conversation about men and society. I'm Ian Ferguson.
I'm Donald Pettit. Kia ora.
Today we are without a guest, so we're winging it a little bit, but we have a lot we want to say. Donald's going to be asking me a whole bunch of questions about human rights and where men fit in.
You've hit the nexus for men's issues and men's human rights in New Zealand are here. Ian happens to be a person who's done a lot of thinking about this matter. I'll say when Ian first approached me about this, I was thinking, although I've been working with men's health for the last 10 or 12 years, I really hadn't thought of it as any human rights issues, though there are some that he'll be talking about that are obvious on reflection. But it's usually not framed in that context. So Ian, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself. What drives you to take an interest in men's rights, human rights in particular?
I have a kind of sense of justice and fairness, and when I see something that I think isn't right, I kind of go, hang on, someone should do something about that. And if there's no one else doing something about that, then you know, I kind of get prodded that, you know, someone must be me or
Was there a pivotal moment for you at all? Like, have you had an interest in human rights before? Was it a...
No, it was kind of a slowly developing kind of thing. Like, I became more aware of some of the issues. Like male suicide is a reasonably obvious kind of issue where men are dying at about three times the rate of women. And so that was kind of an issue, and then there were a few other things that kind of came up and got me a wee bit curious, and I started looking into it. I thought that our human rights framework in New Zealand isn't really taking men's human rights into account, and so that was an area where I could contribute.
Well, what would you say? I'm going to put on the devil's advocate role here for a while. What would you say? Well, men have an unfair share of society right now, patriarchy and all that. What do you think when somebody starts talking about that in response to you talking about men and men's human rights?
Everyone has the same human rights, and we only talk about women's rights or men's rights when their human rights are being violated. So. We're not talking about men having special rights or women having special rights that each other doesn't have. We're just talking about areas where things are falling a wee bit short. So if there were no areas where men's human rights were being violated, then we wouldn't talk about it.
So tell me, you've got a list there I've seen in the past. Maybe you can tell us about where you started and what for as well. Did somebody just sit down and start making a list of men's human rights, or what was there a purpose behind this?
So I became aware that I think the Human Rights Commission were looking for submissions about one of the UN human rights treaties that New Zealand is a signatory to. That gets reviewed every few years, and the Human Rights Commission is responsible for conducting consultations with the community. And they had an advertisement or something. I can't remember how exactly I became aware of it. And I thought, hey, yep, that's something that I'm interested in making a contribution to. It was covering economic, cultural, and social rights, which includes education. Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about how boys are behind in education, so I thought that's something that I'd be able to raise with them. And that's the, and because there's a bunch of UN treaties and a bunch of consultations that are pretty much ongoing, that kind of hooked me into the whole process. And so I've made three or four submissions to the UN, three at the moment, I think. Mm-hmm. So the on economic, cultural and social rights, on children's rights, and one for the Universal Periodic Review, which is covering all of the treaties that we are signatory to. And there's a handful of treaties covering things like what we've talked about, but also like indigenous rights, disabled rights, and a bunch of other things.
With those obviously overlapping with men as well. So maybe get into the meat of it. What's your list? Where do you start? What do you got for us as the first item on the agenda today?
Well, the easiest thing to point out as an issue is that we have laws which don't treat men and women equally. And so that's all there in black and white, and we don't actually need to have any degree of interpretation. You just go to the legislation website and you can see them. So we have possibly the obvious one is we have a crime called male assaults female. And that has twice the maximum sentence as the gender-neutral common assault. So male assaults female has a two-year maximum sentence and common assault has a one-year maximum sentence. And obviously, a woman can't be charged with male assaults female. So there's a differential in treatment that's written right into the law.
Well, is that allowed under international human rights legislation or even our local government legislation? Can you actually make a law that discriminates based on gender or age or anything like that?
We have the Bill of Rights Act, which prohibits – well, actually, it doesn't prohibit. It just says that we shouldn't do it. There's no actual mandatory mechanism in that, but – the Attorney General is supposed to point out laws that violate the Bill of Rights.
And so somehow these slipped through without being challenged.
So male assaults females from 1963, I think, and it's stayed on the books. So the Bill of Rights Act came in the 1990s. So at the time that the law was introduced, there was no mechanism for pointing it out that it's not equality under the law.
Okay, so it could be now, I guess, if some Queen's Counsel wants to step forward and help Ian turn this one over.
Well, we had the opportunity. Let me back up a wee bit. Yeah. In 2009, the Law Commission actually recommended that it should be repealed.
Yeah.
They made the point that having specific laws like this is not really appropriate because we would have way too many laws if we wanted to address every individual situation. So we don't have male assaults female and we don't have we could have like a citizen assaults police officer, and we could also have all the situations that you could possibly have, we could have laws about, and that's not practical, it's not useful. So they were suggesting that we repeal it and address any issues about difference in size and strength in the sentencing in terms of aggravating factors. So if mm-hmm. a big person assaults a small person, then the judge can say, hang on a minute, you should have, you know, that's worse than
you've got
the other way around.
A different level of responsibility if there's an obvious balance or imbalance.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and at that time we didn't choose to repeal the act.
No, the Justice Minister at the time said that we weren't going to do it because we had such a focus on domestic violence.
Oh, so it was too important to let that go. So this is seen as something that's going to address domestic violence in New Zealand and having a long-term impact. So when you talk to MPs about these issues, what happens if you talk to somebody in power?
Well, we actually had the opportunity to repeal the law in the new Family and Whānau Violence Bill,
yeah.
Which was reasonably recent. I'm not sure if it's exactly in law yet, but it's due to mm-hmm. soonish. I haven't been keeping complete track. But they made a lot of changes to the Crimes Act.
Yeah.
And so they had the opportunity to repeal the law then.
Sure. A lot of MPs would have seen it then as well, so they gave it consideration.
Yes. And okay. Not only did they give it consideration, but they explicitly said we should keep this law.
Okay.
Because we want to recognise that violence against women is a serious problem. Okay. So it wasn't about the practicality of the law, because all the practicalities were dealt with the new laws that we're bringing in the Family and Whānau Violence Bill.
Okay.
So it was just a symbolic gesture.
That they thought this seems wrong to repeal it.
They wanted to have something in legislation that showed that they took violence against women seriously, mm-hmm. Which keeping it does, but it also shows that we're not really interested in equality under the law. The symbolism of it is not only that we're serious against violence against women, but it's also that we don't really take equality seriously.
Mm. Okay.
And so I've when I've brought this up to MPs, they're pretty dismissive.
They're saying we've looked into it already and it's done. We've made the decision. Okay.
I mean, it's like maybe that's something we could consider in the future or something along those lines.
It does make my skin crawl to think we have legislation different based on a gender, thinking of, well, even transsexuality as well. where's the line?
Well, it's really interesting in that regard because on the one hand, there are people pushing for people to be able to self-identify as a man or a woman.
Yeah.
And we're also maintaining legislation that specifically labels, has laws specifically for men or for women.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a conflict there between the self-identification. Because what happens if what does male assaults female mean if people can self-identify?
True.
I mean, it gets very confusing.
So the police arrest me if I assault my female partner and I say, oh, I'm a woman.
Well,
when I turn up at court.
Well, that's the potential and one of the confusing things that need to kind of be resolved. But if we had completely gender neutral law, then there'd be very much fewer issues that would come up.
Yeah. So what else? What other laws are there that are gender specific?
So another one is infanticide.
Oh yeah, seen that one. Yeah.
So. A woman who kills her child can be charged with infanticide based on her mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
But that law doesn't apply to men.
And I think that's up to 5 years of age or so.
It's 10.
10. 10?
Yeah.
Really?
It's another old law that has just stuck around.
Just rolled around.
And there's actually a case of a man who was charged with murder but fit all the criteria for infanticide.
That's 15 years ago. Is that the one in Nelson?
I can't remember the exact details, but murder has a maximum sentence of 20 years and infanticide has a maximum sentence of 3 years.
I see.
So being charged with infanticide was not an option for him. They had to charge him with murder. Mm. And even though the situation was that he was in mental distress and would have qualified to be charged with infanticide.
Oh, so I guess maybe that was the thinking that biologically a woman could be in a very different space because of the birthing, the process of birthing, do you think?
It's an old law that they use quite archaic language.
And very different values.
But the principle behind the law is postnatal depression.
Okay.
But we know that men get postnatal depression too. I mean, that's the reasonably recent science.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I understand similar levels as well. So some say half as many men, but or as many men get postnatal depression. So this sounds like an uncommon situation, though. But what other laws are there that are going on out there that are gender specific?
So there's a small adoption law, which means that single men can't adopt girls.
No, okay. Girls specifically?
Yeah.
Hmm. But they can adopt boys?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's that's another kind of old law that is still on the books. Another law is circumcision, where it's legal to cut the genitals of boys, but we have a law specifically prohibiting cutting the genitals of girls. And that's a reasonably recent law, actually. The prohibition of cutting girls was 1996, I think. And we've just got another law updating that to be more comprehensive going through Parliament at the moment.
So protecting girls.
Protecting girls.
So there's already a law, but they're updating it to do a better job of protecting girls, but it's okay, it's still legal to circumcise a boy.
Yes, yes. And there's about estimate of about 3,000 boys circumcised in New Zealand every year.
Wow.
Although I think that's an overestimate because that comes from the Southern Cross who do the circumcisions.
So 10 boys a day or something like that.
Yeah, it's way too many.
So these are obviously cultural choices as compared to required by a foreskin that's causing problems for the penis.
Yeah, these are non-medical circumcisions, largely.
So 3,000 of them. Wow. I mean, and I do know some men that are quite upset about circumcision right now. It seems to be an emerging issue for many guys.
Mm.
Well, we'll have to put that on the agenda for a future podcast or radio program.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another law. I mean, that is different by gender, and that's kind of what we're talking about right now, rather than the specifics of circumcision itself.
Yeah.
Circumcision requires a whole show on its own,
okay,
I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I think I know some people we can invite. Those are the four archaic laws, you say. Is there anything else that exists in our legal system?
Judges are given sentencing guidelines.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the sentencing guidelines for rape and sexual assault are based on whether there was penetration or not.
Okay.
Which obviously falls along gendered lines very significantly. So if a woman sexually assaults a man, generally it's not penetration, but the other way around.
So a guy wakes up and a woman's on top of him and didn't choose it.
Yeah, that's classified differently than the other way around.
That would be sexual assault, I assume?
The unlawful sexual connection is the technical term. And so the sentencing guidelines is that rape, which means penetration, the with no aggravating factors, the recommended sentence is 6 to 8 years.
Yeah.
For non-penetrative assaults, 2 to 5 years.
2 to 5 years. And I've seen the term envelopment used before. For the female version, is that?
That's not mentioned in that I've seen in the law.
No, of course not. It's a relatively recent term online, I think, so someone across it. Yeah.
So that means that female perpetrators are more likely to get off lightly compared to males.
Okay.
And there's research that shows that is in fact happening, that for comparable assaults, women are getting shorter sentences.
Oh, okay, for that classic waking up in the middle of the night and somebody's doing this.
Huh. So, I mean, the biggest difference is for the no aggravating factors. As you get more aggravating factors, there's a smaller differential because as violence and other stuff are introduced, then that's seen as a more serious crime. But there's still that differential between essentially
the gender alone.
Men and women.
Yeah, as compared to harm done. So maybe they're baking that in, assuming men are going to be less likely to be harmed if they're.
Well, I can sort of see the argument for penetrative assault being more serious when there's the considerations of things like pregnancy,
or disease.
But I think those things can be considered as aggravating factors rather than being straight out in the sentencing guidelines.
I see.
Because I think that male victims should feel like they're getting the same justice as female victims.
Huh.
And at the moment, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay. I've heard in practice that that a male who's been assaulted by a male usually finds it easier to press their claim with the law.
So that would probably be a penetrative assault.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Is there any other – I guess there's laws and then there's practice. You mentioned – what's that, the court? The court measure – what was the term you used again?
I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, you know, the court process or the sentencing guidelines. There's that. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's – is that written into the law or is that –
Yeah. So that came from – there was a case in the High Court or – something like that.
Oh, okay.
And the result of that case was they produced these guidelines.
Okay.
So that's a legal document.
Okay. So, and I'm a social worker. I don't know the laws.
I'm not a lawyer either. So I'm doing my best though.
Okay, you're doing a great job. So the other issue, I guess, then is are there other laws or sentencing guidelines that have been developed that are gendered? That you're aware of, or
there's like a kind of minor law that says for the public service to be the public service has to be a good employer. One of the things about being a good employer is considering the needs of women,
and that's
specifically that says that. But and also the needs of Maori and the needs of disabled people and so on. But one of them is the needs of women. But I don't think women have any needs that a man couldn't also have.
Okay.
If a woman's a mother, a man could be a father.
Yeah.
If a woman needs to take time off due to pregnancy or something, then that's a medical condition, and a man might need to take time off for a medical condition.
Prostate cancer or whatever, yeah.
So I don't think that needs to be written into the law.
But it actually is.
I would go along with something like taking to the needs take into consideration the needs of parents.
Yep.
I think that's a
gender
good,
neutral.
That's gender neutral and a good thing because we want parents to be able to look after their kids and not be hampered by their work.
Yeah.
But I don't think we need a gendered law in that regard.
Interesting that we're more interested in taking care of women in that context, since traditionally it's male workers, a male workforce. Okay.
Well, I think it comes from the idea that because it was predominantly a male workforce. That most of the work is structured around the needs of men already.
Okay.
Which is debatable because I think most workplaces are structured around the needs of the employer.
and so when women were entering the workforce in larger numbers, that caused some diversion. So we just wanted to take care of women, not the men. And hence we developed specific ways to take care of the women, but not the men.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these laws have good intentions.
Yeah.
And we're from a previous time where there was a lot more kind of paternalistic attitudes. But I think we've moved on, and there's no real excuse for still having those laws on the books.
Okay.
We should do a cleanup.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really good place to stop and have a break right now.
Change had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town.
I said, chick that used to dance a lot, shaking what she'd got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was red hot. I mean she was steaming. And that time over at Johnny's place, well, this chick got up and she slapped Johnny's face. Man, we just fell about the place. If that chick don't wanna know, forget her. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. I said, the boys are back in town. 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 Spread the word. Flow and blood will spill. And if the boys wanna fight, you better let them. That jukebox in the corner blasting out my favorite song. The nights are getting warmer. It won't be long, won't be long till summer comes. Now that the boys are here again, the boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town.
Welcome back. You're with Men Talk. We've just covered a lot of laws that show discrimination against men in the past and are currently existing. So I'm curious what other men's rights or men's human rights issues come up when you're doing your research. Ian, and when I was just talking to you, you were saying that. So there's actual outcomes that demonstrate a lack of human rights or a shortening of human rights for men in particular. Maybe you can get into those for us.
Yeah, I should explain that our human rights framework with it that we use from the UN and human rights framework has what they call substantive rights, which is focused on different outcomes for different groups.
Okay.
So we know, for example, that Maori are behind on a lot of outcomes, and so that's considered a human rights violation due to the difference in outcomes.
And you mentioned men's suicide as an example earlier as well.
Yes, so men die at a much higher rate from suicide than women. It's about three times.
Oh, okay.
And there's a similar situation between Maori and Pākehā. And so you can see the differential outcomes and how that relates to the human rights of those groups.
So what can you take us through the list I see you've got in front of you?
So we've talked a bit about the law. So one of the differential outcomes is the amount of people in prison.
Oh, okay. Definitely it's men, isn't it?
So it's over 90% men. And obviously we've talked about, you know, there's laws that discriminate against men that will put them in prison for longer.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that when men do come in front of judges and are sentenced, they get longer sentences for the same crimes compared to women, and they're less likely to get parole.
I've heard somebody claim at least that women are more likely to be punished harshly by the courts if it's in a place of women's traditional roles, such as with babies or so on. Obviously, that's not true for infanticide. As you mentioned earlier, but have you ever seen any contradictory research?
It's not 100% straightforward.
Okay.
For example, if a woman presents in a very masculine way, mm-hmm. she's likely to get a longer sentence.
Is she? Okay. So it's masculinity at risk here, is it?
I think it's actually there was a research from Christchurch that established this, and they Samantha Jeffries, who did the research, looked at the written statements from judges.
Yeah.
And so we actually know what is going on.
The judges when, for thinking.
And so judges see men as being bad and dangerous and in need of punishment.
Yeah.
And women as being like a victim of circumstance and in need of rehabilitation.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a very gendered stereotype, isn't it? Very old school.
Yeah, yeah. So that leads to having way more men in prison than women.
Okay.
And I'm perfectly happy to accept that there is probably going to be some kind of differential between men and women.
Sure. If we were treated the same under the law, we'd still find that difference there because there are slight differences between men and women, you might have noticed.
I have noticed. I don't notice too much, though, because that would be bad. But we have evidence that there is discrimination going on in the sentencing.
So we should be
addressing that somehow. I mean, it's quite a difficult thing to kind of address and still maintain the fairness that in the justice system that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not fair to say, okay, you're a man, you get a discount.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right. That only goes so far. And I've heard there's I've heard the justification made that men are more likely to be recidivist as well. So I don't know. But that's still, you're still being judged as being part of a group, and therefore you get a harsher prison sentence. And that's we wouldn't go there with Maori or any other group. It's just
There's the interesting comparison between men and Maori, although they're two different groups.
Yeah.
But we address them very differently. So Maori are overrepresented in prison.
Of course, yeah.
And that's seen as a very significant problem, and the governor's working to address it.
Yeah.
And dealing with all that kind of bias, but there is nothing that on the bias against men.
Mm.
And so, I mean, if we had a consistent standard and said, look, we're against bias in the justice system, and here's the bias we've identified, and we're going to address all of them.
Yeah.
Then that would be one thing, but it seems quite striking to me that we have identified one bias in the justice system that is worth addressing, and another one that isn't.
Because we don't care about that other group, you think, or we're just not aware of it, or what's driving this? Like, what's driving that this kind of legislation and these kind of instances will continue on?
My feeling about the kind of current state of human rights is that its focus is about lifting up marginalized groups.
Yeah.
Rather than focusing on fairness for everybody.
Yeah.
That's not a completely distinct concept, but when you start from a position of lifting up marginalized groups.
Which sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about lifting up marginalized groups. If everyone had their human rights not being violated, then those marginalized groups would be lifted up.
Yeah.
And we would see a reduction of the proportion of Maori in prison, for example.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get back to the list, aware that you've got quite a bit
to go through. That's right. So there's an issue with in the justice system with that substantive
sentencing differential.
Human rights.
Yeah.
Another one is in education, which we've talked about in previous shows.
Yeah.
And so boys in primary school are doing worse in reading compared to girls.
Yeah.
And in terms of maths and science, it's much closer, and boys are maybe slightly ahead in maths or science. I can't remember which one. But the children who are doing the worst in all those subjects are boys.
Hmm. So I guess you could be arguing that that's just a case of everybody has equal access now, and just some aren't doing as well as others because they just don't have as much potential. Do you think that's true for boys?
It might be true.
Yeah.
However, education, we're talking about children.
Yeah.
So the responsibility for children's education is primarily on adults.
Yeah.
So if there's a differential, it's not the child's fault, it's the adult's fault. Well, or the adult should take responsibility. We probably shouldn't say start blaming people, but but the responsibility for making sure that children get the best education they can is on adults. Yeah. So we shouldn't be saying, well, those kids are just bad at reading.
Yeah.
And we should be saying, well, they're bad at reading, but we should be addressing it.
Okay, so we could take a group that's not doing as well and just decide, actually, we're going to make sure they get an extra boost just because we want similar outcomes. I mean, this is bouncing into the equity of outcome versus equity of opportunity, isn't it?
It is, but I'm happy to look at the equality of outcomes for things like reading. I think everyone should be able to read. and when we start saying, let's just give everyone the opportunity to be able to read.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with that scenario. And especially when we're talking about children.
Yeah.
That if we don't educate children up to a high standard, when they become adults and start making their own decisions, then they don't have the same opportunities.
Hmm.
So the equality of opportunity is... it's taken away from them in some respect.
Okay.
So if we don't teach someone to read, then what opportunities do they have when they become an adult?
Yeah. Now, I don't want to miss out on having some discussion about the response of the Human Rights Commission to all of these issues in New Zealand. And do you think we should go through your list, or do you think we should start talking about that question right now? Or should we leave everybody hanging until we get to that point? Because it's quite intriguing what the New Zealand Human Rights Commission has said in response to some of your submissions,
or
not said.
So education is an issue, and there's a few other issues like men's reproductive rights, which is a can of worms.
Yeah.
But that's another issue, and there's the way men are treated in the family court.
Okay.
Well, family court seems to be bad for everybody, but there are a lot of men who've had bad experience with family court, and so that's another issue. There's different health outcomes. We talked about suicide, but then there's also men die in every age group more than women.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole bunch of issues. In terms of human rights for men.
And that's because of just the measured outcomes for men. So
that, the standard in the human rights framework is that outcomes matter.
Yeah.
And so there are differential outcomes for men and women.
Okay.
And boys and girls.
Yeah.
So that is a human rights issue based on the standards that we're using.
Are there other substantive issues that are on your list, or are we through those?
That's kind of the bulk of them. There'll be a few other ones.
Oh, of course, yeah. I've stumbled across them myself.
What are you thinking of?
I think you mentioned domestic violence as well earlier, didn't you? Like the response towards men. Definitely my work sees many men that have been experiencing domestic violence from family partners, and the police interventions being incredibly harmful often, or neglectful, or punitive, or disinterested, and not all police, but enough that it's quite frightening when I hear the stories from people that are providing the care for those men as well. Nobody's providing care directly for those men. They just occasionally bump against somebody who takes care of them, but it's not. That's quite frightening for me to watch.
I mean, that's a really interesting issue in terms of human rights, because violence against women is considered a special case of human rights violation.
Is it?
It gets a lot of mention in
the UN papers
and the Human Rights Commission. In fact, one of the UN treaties on human rights is the Convention for the Elimination of All Discrimination Against Women.
Oh, okay.
And that covers that in there, and they specifically say we need to eliminate violence against women.
I've certainly seen the UN papers about gender balance or gender outcomes, and that's not about gendered outcomes. That's about women's outcomes. Does that guide our system as well? The accounting to the UN for how well our women are doing versus how well men are doing as well.
There's no specific or explicit mechanism for making sure men's rights are protected.
Or also taken. There's no measuring. There's no...
The human rights treaties say a lot about equality between men and women.
Yeah.
But there's no kind of specificity in terms of, for example, the Convention Against Discrimination Against Women, which is very clear, these are the things that you need to
account for. Yeah.
And just going back a little bit, that doesn't mean that women have more human rights than men. That convention is just being explicitly saying women have these rights and we should protect them.
Yeah.
So it's not so as far as I can tell, that all the rights that the women have in that men also have, mm-hmm. but they're just not explicitly stated to be protected.
So when it comes down to protection, that would be our New Zealand Human Rights Commission that have that opportunity to take action if that's what New Zealand society wants. What's their role?
So the Human Rights Commission is an official under the UN human rights framework. Countries have like an official human rights organization.
I see. So that's
so they
got legislation.
And so they have like a special responsibility to produce reports for the UN and so on.
Yeah.
The Human Rights Commission was created under the Human Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple of acts that I might be getting confused. But anyway, our legislation created the Human Rights Commission for the purpose of being that UN, official UN organization.
Mm-hmm.
And also to promote human rights, provide a mechanism for people to complain about human rights. And so they have a role in mediating complaints between two parties.
Yeah.
They also submit opinions about legislation that's coming up and might represent people at the Human Rights Tribunal.
Yeah.
Their role is kind of the human rights watchdog for New Zealand.
And how did our watchdog do when you made them aware of this submission, when you submitted this paper to them?
So I've made submissions to the Human Rights Commission and I've made submissions directly to the UN.
Yeah.
When I've talked to people from the Human Rights Commission, they seem pretty open about the things I'm talking about, and they've told me things like, yes, men's rights are important, we should focus on that more. That doesn't translate into what the Human Rights Commission is reporting to the UN. There's a disconnect between what they're saying to me individually and what they end up reporting. In fact,
That was a shared experience. I was with you last year or 2 years ago when we went through that process, and they told us that the nine hearings they'd held around the country, eight of them had people speaking up for men's issues and asking they'd be included, and the final report included nothing, or it was just a very wet comment about men as well. But beyond that, there was nothing substantive, was there?
There was a section about about the consultations they did with the public, and they said, and people brought up men's issues.
Yeah, but nothing came forward.
And that was about it.
Yeah.
So, for example, I've never seen any report from the Human Rights Commission that talks about the fact that we have unequal laws, which seems to be a pretty fundamental human rights violation.
Well, I understand that they're not in a position to change any of those laws because they're legislated in themselves. So I've asked that of them. But my guess is if we had a law that they felt should be changed, they could bring attention to it.
Mm. Yes, they make submissions on proposed legislation and things like that.
Yeah.
That's part of their job is to.
So they likely would have been engaged in the male assaults female when that was reconsidered as well, or rescinding that.
The new family and whānau violence bill. I'm pretty sure they would have made a submission. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of thing that they would do.
Of course.
Most recently, they made a submission to the new female genital mutilation bill.
Of course.
And they referenced various human rights treaties and gone through it in a lot of detail, but yes, they should.
But they didn't include anything about men and circumcision at all in that?
I don't recall that, no.
Okay. And I can say behind the scenes that I wrote to the Human Rights Commission about that very issue and got a statement back from them saying, well, it's kind of a bit of tension between the family's right, religious rights, and the child's rights to bodily autonomy. So, but it seemed like they're fine for that for boys, but not for girls for some reason. Don't get me started. I felt really angry when I read that letter, but I'll probably bring that up at a future radio program.
Well, that's I think, highlights one of the key issues, is that we don't treat men's human rights as with the same standards that we treat women's human rights or other groups' human rights.
Okay.
So we're not – the Human Rights Commission isn't really reporting men's human rights violations to the UN.
Yeah. So what do you think the rationale behind that would be?
So part of it is what I talked about, is that the focus is more on lifting up marginalized groups.
Okay, so men aren't a marginalized group according to their initial process. That's your guess, of course. We're just guessing what might be there. So go for it, Ian. Take a chance.
Alien lizards.
You think they might be alien lizards and here to crush men in particular, are they? Okay.
Yeah, well,
to take over? Okay.
Well, they need to whittle down men so they can take over the planet.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thin us down.
So that's one theory.
Yeah.
But there's a long history of attention on women's rights.
Okay.
And so the Human Rights Commission is working inside a framework with all that history.
So like a legislative or a cultural momentum towards still focusing and improving the human rights of women.
Yes.
And obviously there's cases, there are issues for women.
Women should have the human rights protected.
As well. You're not against that then, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. No, I think everyone's human rights should be protected.
Yeah.
So it's the criticism is not that the Human Rights Commission is protecting women's rights. It's the absence of protection
for men
men's
boys.
Human rights.
Yeah.
And obviously the Human Rights Commission has limited resources and so on and so forth.
You have to choose where you focus your energy. And
but I actually asked the Disability Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission a question on Facebook about that.
Yeah.
She made a post about, oh, these are the things I'm focusing on this year.
Yeah.
And I asked her, how do you figure out what to focus on? And do you have like a measurement schedule?
Yeah.
Because I've done some teaching in polytechs, and we have a marking schedule to make sure that there might be a bit of 2 or 3% slippage.
Yeah.
But generally, we want to be consistent and make it as objective as possible. And I was thinking, I wonder if the Human Rights Commission has some kind of template that they have come up with a score to prioritize different issues.
Yeah, you'd hope
so. Doesn't seem that they do.
Oh, okay.
It seems like their process is to meet with stakeholders and have a chat and look at what we've done previously and that sort of thing. So that was pretty disappointing.
Just occurred to me, would you call yourself a men's rights advocate?
That is a true description.
It's accurate. MRAs is what they're called, isn't it? So, okay, it could be a pejorative in some ways.
The problem is it takes so much, it has a lot of baggage.
It does,
and is used as a pejorative.
So I guess feminists could have that too, you know, somebody could have some hostile towards somebody who's, well, you don't have to be a feminist to advocate for women's rights either, do you? So you can care about women's rights and men's rights. And
You don't need any label.
No.
The thing with men's rights advocate is it's a descriptive term.
Yeah.
So if someone is advocating for men's rights, then they are a men's rights advocate.
That's right.
With something like feminist, then that's a kind of more of a self-identification and aligning with beliefs.
Yeah, I see.
There's a little bit of difference here. So yeah. I can't get away from the being described as a men's rights advocate because that's exactly what I do.
Yeah, sure.
So
are there many of you out there? I'll put myself in there too. I'm an MRA as well, so I've advocated for men on many occasions now. But are there many of us?
No.
You don't think
no,
so?
No.
The Ministry of Men's Affairs doesn't have a good mailing list of us all? Or?
I mean, there's...
There is no Ministry of Men's Affairs, by the way. That was a bit of a...
Well, there's a kind of tongue-in-cheek organization of some guys who got together and called themselves the Ministry of Men's Affairs.
Yeah.
So when I've gone to these consultations, I've been the only one raising issues about men and boys.
Yeah. I'll say that 10 years ago, I went to the, was it 4 or 5 yearly consult that they do for the human rights in New Zealand who report to the UN, and I was the only one there as well. So I know how that feels. It's a very lonely place. It was really nice there at that other hui there about 2 years ago where I was there, others were there, you know, people were talking about men as survivors of sexual abuse and men as different aspects of men, and to know that all these other groups around the country had said something. And then I'll tell you, it was very disheartening to see the final report that came out of that. We did make a submission, a parallel submission, or you made a parallel submission, didn't you, with your collection that we have right here? And how did that go? To the UN?
So that was for the Universal Periodic Review.
That's right.
And the process is... For that, as every country comes before the Human Rights Council at the UN, and the country submits a report, and then there's a whole bunch of parallel reports, including one by the Human Rights Commission, and then the UN Human Rights Council gives the country a bunch of recommendations. The country can then say, yes, we accept that recommendation, or they can note a recommendation, so they can't reject a recommendation. They can only say, yes, we've read that. The current state of recommendations that are given to countries related to gender is that 0.1% of gender-related recommendations are about men and boys.
0.1%?
One in 1,000 gender-related recommendations are about men and boys.
Wow.
Over the whole world last time I checked. But because it's an ongoing process, there's more recommendations now and I haven't checked them. But that's when I look. So it's one in 1,000 recommendations related to gender. So I ignored all of the ones that were recommendations of treat men and women equally.
Of course.
Because that's very vague and not very specific. The recommendations that were in there were things like dealing with gay men's rights in places like Africa where they have it particularly difficult.
Yeah.
And there might have been something about child soldiers.
Yeah, boys in particular, yeah.
So there were only 12.
Oh, okay.
Out of 12,000.
And they weren't for nice Western countries like us, I assume.
No. However, in the last – after making the submission – to the UPR, we did get a recommendation back that included men and boys, and that was about male victims of sexual abuse. There was a recommendation that said New Zealand should put in a mechanism to make sure these people are treated fairly. I can't remember the exact
words. Was it just sexual abuse? I thought it was for abuse in general.
Yes, I think you're right there.
Yeah,
I think
so it was. Because it was domestic violence was some of the concerns as well.
It wasn't specifically about men and boys, but they were specifically included as a group that New Zealand needs to focus on more.
Okay.
So that was really positive.
So they've had a little bit of feedback that they can ignore if they want.
So out of the 200 or so recommendations we got, but we got one. So that's more than one in 1,000.
Okay. Yeah, there you
so
go.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you. So Ministry of Justice, I wrote to them to ask what they think of the lack of care for men, and they assured me there actually is care for men that are victims of domestic violence in Christchurch in Canterbury, and you know, I assume the systems are the same around the country. So I'm not very hopeful that the Ministry of Justice had heard from the Human Rights Commission's report back from the UN. Or maybe men are being taken care of in this regard. I just haven't seen it, frankly, and I work in the social services.
Well, the whole process doesn't have a lot of teeth.
No.
So
even if New Zealand is breaching human rights on a very systematic level, it can just drift on, can it?
The recommendations are just recommendations, and the weight comes from the fact that people don't want to look bad.
Oh, okay. So an MRA has to make sure that this is in the newspapers regularly, do they?
I'm not sure what the best way is. I quite like doing these submissions. It kind of pushes my buttons and appeals to me, but I think there are plenty of other avenues.
Yeah. Is there any network of people advocating for men's human rights in New Zealand?
It's a pretty loose association of people who are kind of doing their own thing and mostly independently.
Sure.
So there's not a huge...
And I know there's a men's issues conference coming up in April up in, I think it's in Auckland this time.
Yeah, I heard about that. I decided not to go. I need to monitor my stress levels and,
of course, yeah,
and that sort of thing.
You can't give as much as you know you can. Yeah. So if you could wave your wand, this is where you get to be magical. You've got a minute or two. Tell me what magical thing you would do to fix this situation.
Well, I think we need to have a formal and explicit mechanism for including men's rights in our human rights framework.
You don't think just deciding to do it would do it?
It needs to be explicitly stated.
Yeah.
Because what happens when it's not explicitly stated is the things that are explicitly stated get all the priority.
Yeah.
And then the things that aren't kind of get, maybe if there's a chance, then they'll be included. So there needs to be a specific mechanism. So a ministry for men, for example, would be something like that. Yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily the best mechanism for doing it.
Yeah.
Maybe just having an MP who's a minister for men, maybe having a human rights commissioner who's responsible for men's human rights. But as long as there's something that's formal and explicit.
Who's working for that at a higher level. Mm,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Ian. I've learned a lot in the program today. I hope many others have, because this isn't something I've had many opportunities to hear about. Have you anything else you want to add before we finish up today?
Not really, but if anyone wants to take on the mantle of advocating for men's human rights, then I encourage you to do it.
Okay. And we'll post that. Have you posted that list anywhere that people can read?
The UPR submission I made, which covers most of the areas, is posted online. I can't remember
the website. Could you post it on the International Men's Day Facebook page along with this?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, good one. Thank you very much, Ian.